Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument, Flava Works versus Gunter. Mr. May or Mr. May?
Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Kevin May, and I represent the appellants, who I will refer to collectively as my Vidster. Your Honors, the trial court erred in three primary ways. It erred in granting a preliminary injunction against my Vidster on a claim of contributory copyright infringement where there was no underlying direct copyright infringement by my Vidster's users.
So can I just maybe underscore a point of clarification that's in the briefs, which is that somehow or another, and I'm kind of interested in how, the question of direct uploads is not before us. We're talking here only about links.
Correct, Your Honor. This system, this website, does not allow for uploads by my Vidster's users.
Well, not now. I thought that there was some of that in the past.
There was a time, and this service has been suspended, but there was a time where when a user was creating a link to a third-party video, if they were a premium user, and at the time of the hearing this applied to about 30 of the 80,000 users of this service, if that video that was being linked to was also available to be downloaded by the third-party server, that user could create a backup copy.
But that's somehow it is not part of this interlocutory appeal. I just want to make sure that we don't have to deal with that technology.
Correct, Your Honor. My client has suspended that service, and therefore it is not an issue for the time period that's relevant for a preliminary injunction analysis, because there will be no backup copies made during the pendency of this litigation.
How do we know?
My client has represented to the court that it will not do that.
Well, usually mere cessation of unlawful activity doesn't eliminate the appropriateness of an injunction, you know, the Grant case.
What I would say, Your Honor, is that if the trial court had issued a preliminary injunction that specifically spoke to the question of backup copies, and I don't believe the trial court did, but if the trial court had done that, we would not be appealing that aspect of the preliminary injunction, because my client has represented and has no intention of allowing any backup service to occur during
the pendency.
Mr. May,
do you seek to go before the trial court, Judge Grady, and seek a modification of the injunction in light of your representation this morning?
We would be prepared to do that. We would be prepared to agree to and not appeal any injunction that was limited to further backup copies being created during the pendency of this litigation.
Let me see if I understand the facts correctly. Flava, some of Flava's customers post Flava films, whatever they are, on their own websites, right? Doesn't my Vidster in effect provide a tunnel by which that unauthorized posting, unauthorized copying, comes through to customers, subscribers, whatever you want to call them, of my Vidster?
I would not agree with the characterization of a tunnel, because a tunnel implies that the videos actually come through the My Vidster website and the My Vidster servers.
Think of it as a telescope. You look through the telescope and you see the the upload, you get out, in effect, you're looking at the website of the infringer.
The link itself is a pointer. It points to the location of the third-party host of the video. And for the viewer's browser to see that video, the viewer's browser has to make a request to that third-party server.
But the upshot of it is that the MyVidster customer is looking at the infringing video.
The internet viewer is looking at the video, correct?
So doesn't that mean that MyVidster is an accomplice in infringement?
No, because we have to take it one step at a time. And for MyVidster to contribute to infringement, there has to be a direct underlying infringement.
Well, that's the person who, without authorization, posts the or copies the Flava video onto his website.
That's one theory, and it's not a theory that was pled or.
What do you mean? It's a theory. Isn't that an infringement?
To the extent that a third party downloaded the FlavorWorks video onto its server and provided access to it without authorization, yes, I would agree.
Okay, that's a direct infringement. And then MyVidster enables some other person to see that infringing video, but also to he can copy it onto his own server, right?
There are instances if that video is made available by the third party where people could download it.
So yes. MyVidster is an accomplice. Now, what is it doing, or what is it willing to do, in order to reduce infringement? I don't understand. For example. Why isn't it willing to do these searches with terms like Flava, which would identify the video as a Flava proprietary work? Why isn't that a reasonable way to minimize your role in promoting infringements?
Two reasons, Your Honor. First, the DMCA puts the obligation to police copyrights on the copyright holder, not on the service provider. So there's no obligation to take an affirmative step like that.
I don't understand that. If you're contributing to infringement, you have a duty. It doesn't have to come out of a statute. You have a duty as a contributory infringer to do whatever is feasible to minimize the contributory infringement. So why can't you have, these search mechanisms that identify the proprietary videos that are being infringed?
The problematic aspect of that is false positives, Your Honor.
All right, so you have some false positives. How many false positives?
There's no record on that.
Well, why
can't
you make
the
record
on it?
I mean, it seems to me if what you're saying is that, I realize you don't accept this characterization, but suppose it is true that you're a contributory infringer and there are steps you can take but you won't take to reduce the infringement, but you say, well, you won't take them because there'll be false positives. Undoubtedly there will. Well, isn't it your responsibility to advise the court on the frequency of false positives? And maybe there are only a few false positives. Wouldn't be a big deal. If there are a tremendous number, if somehow this search method isn't feasible, you demonstrated that, then you'd win. But don't you have a burden of producing some evidence about that?
Well, two responses, Your Honor. First, the hearing never got to that point because the hearing was focused and the trial court was focused in its opinion on the linking.
Did you offer to present evidence on the false positive problem?
There was evidence presented on the false positive problem in terms of my client testifying that there would be a false positive problem.
That's nothing. What about the magnitude of the problem?
It was impossible at that stage for my client to present evidence on a false the amount of false positives when the software involved hadn't even been written and still hasn't been written.
I have a different question about your theory, at least, of this case, which, I mean, I thought you were saying, in a sense, that there were too many steps, that there, you know, Flava, let's say, creates the copyright, they're the copyright holder, user A infringes, user A copies in an unauthorized way Flava's thing and puts it on their computer. Then user B, who is a subscriber of My Vidster, finds the thing on user A's computer, and then user B creates a link on their My Vidster service. Is that how things work? And I thought you were saying that that was tertiary infringement in some sense.
I think you're right. I mean, the problem with this case from our point of view is that they're arguing that my client committed contributory infringement of its user's contributory infringement of some direct infringement. And the problem with that is it requires that my client have knowledge, that its user had knowledge, that what it was linking to was infringing.
Wasn't in the public domain. And that's where I thought part of your argument under the statute came in about the various provisions that, in a sense, relieve various Internet providers from the burden of checking everything out that's going through their site.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And the problem with shifting to a theory where the direct infringer is the host is that the trial court still had to address DMCA safe harbors. And the trial court's only reason for denying DMCA safe harbor protection was the purported lack of a repeat infringer policy. But the statute is clear. A repeat infringer policy only relates to subscribers and account holders. Those are the MyVidster folks who create links, not some third party. So when you focus on the third party who hosts the video, who we will assume for these purposes is a direct infringer, the trial court's concern about safe harbor protection goes away because there is no repeat infringer policy requirement with respect to some third party that my client has no relationship with, only with respect to subscribers and account holders. So the trial court couldn't have it both ways. It couldn't say, okay, the direct infringement is this third party who hosts the video, and at the same time deny safe harbor protection for a purported lack of a repeat infringer policy, because the repeat infringer policy doesn't apply to those people.
Now, suppose somebody creates a link directly to Flava. Does Flava have sign-in requirements? I mean, oftentimes you'll follow a link and it'll say, you need an account here, you know, put your username and password in before we'll show you the article or we'll show you the whatever it is. Is that what Flava does?
My understanding is if you have to pay to be on FlavaWorks sites, and if you paid, you'd get a password.
But if you didn't pay, if you just followed a link to Flava, you would not be able to view the content?
That's my understanding, correct. I think that the underlying assumption here is that the FlavaWorks videos and questions are ones that maybe paid members took from the site and then published somewhere else.
So what we're worried about is pursuing these infringers of Flava out there and whether my Vidster's allowance of links is close enough to count for the statute.
That's correct, and it's our position that FlavaWorks has many vehicles for policing this available to them, including going after the third-party host who's actually a direct infringer. go after the host, these links will never work. They won't work anymore. They can't be made in the future.
So what do you do with the notices under the DMCA? Have you gotten them?
We received DMCA notices, and we've taken down the links in response. Yes, Your Honors. Unless...
Okay, want to reserve the rest of your time?
I will reserve. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. May. Mr. Huon?
Morning. May it please the Court, my name is Minith Hun, and I represent the plaintiff appellee, Flavor Works, in this case. We ask that you affirm the district court's entering of the injunction in this particular case. Just to correct some of the facts that had been discussed earlier.
Speak louder.
Sure. They had represented they've suspended the backup service, but there are videos that continue to reside on my Vidster that are linked to my Vidster. They produced a chart that was produced by my Vidsters, and the source for that was my Vidster. That's in the record.
But, you know, that's why I started with this. It seems to me if there's absolutely no dispute between the parties about the backup copies, all you would need is a modification of the injunction to make that clear. Judge Posner is exactly right. I mean, just saying I'm going to be good forever now isn't enough. But nobody's fighting about that. So it seems to me the tough part of this case isn't the backup copies.
I think there is a dispute because those backup copies are still there and they're being linked.
Well, I'm trying to say he's not saying that he would oppose an injunction, though.
Sure.
So I'm just trying to say, couldn't we understand that a properly modified injunction would address all of your concern about the backup copies?
I understand.
And we could focus on what seems to me to be the more difficult issue. And the issue that also seems to me you're asking us to conflict with the Perfect Ten decision from the Ninth Circuit.
I don't think there is a conflict. I think just as the Amster decision reported, there's always going to be infringing and non-infringing usage of new technology.
But that's too general. This is not Amster, this case. Amster wasn't about links. If you follow a link, you're subject to whatever restrictions the server that you link to has imposed on the content. You can't just go behind the wall.
The links are technology for videos. File sharing is technology for music. The difference between the Perfect 10 case and this case, in Perfect 10, Google is acting in a neutral capacity. My Vidster allows people to troll the Internet to look for stolen or copyrighted videos and to put them in one place.
Well, how do you think they do that? I wasn't convinced that was an accurate description.
We have in the record a blog that my Vidster's creator posted in which he discussed creating a plugin for Firefox that allows browsers to surf the web to bypass private videos. Once they embed those videos, they can make backup copies and putting
well,
the backup
aside. There you go again with the backup.
Putting the backup
copy.
Aside.
Suppose if you took care of your backup copy problem, would you be happy?
No.
Would you realize that then links are just extended ways to use somebody else's computer?
No, because that's how the Internet operates. The Internet is a system of computers. The Perfect 10 decision server test was a mistake. It was error. It's not something that should be followed. But
why is it wrong? It seems to me that you are, in fact, going to... I mean, we all follow links every day, and you are compiling instructions that take you to the other computer.
But there's a difference between Google acting as an automated neutral search engine as opposed to somebody that creates a website that trolls...
You're focusing on the fact that Google uses an algorithm to search the Internet, whereas a human being isn't an algorithm, or at least we don't usually think of human beings as algorithms.
Correct. It's the
so
volitional...
So why is that important?
Because it's the volitional conduct of the MyVidster users that go out there and look for these copyrighted videos. And
I think that's baloney. I mean, if you do a clever enough Google search, that's volitional conduct as well.
But I don't index them and create a repository for copyrighted videos for other people to come and steal those videos.
That just depends what the user's doing. If the user finds a video, the user wouldn't even necessarily know, looking at that video, whether it had been dedicated to the public domain or whether it was still under copyright or whether it was partly under copyright and partly not. Some people, some rock groups, for example, like to dedicate to the public domain music videos so that they can get their names known.
But unlike sites like YouTube, MyVidster has full-blown films of Star Trek on its website. It's on Mr. Gunther's favorite page. I think a user would know that when they find a full-blown film of Star Trek that it's a copyrighted video, especially when there's an image that passes by that says FBI warning. I think there's...
So why not just have a DMCA notice for that? I don't see why that changes the liability regime that Congress has created. Star Trek's not your movie.
We sent several DMCA notices to MyVidster. MyVidster's policy, if you look in the record, is that if it's available on the internet, it must be free. It's this cavalier attitude that anything on the internet that I can access is free that's causing these problems. They don't have a repeat infringers policy. They say
that
they do.
So what burden would you say that hosts of websites have to assess the level of copyright protection that exists? I mean, the same thing would be true for Google. If a Google algorithm takes you to a website, it may or may not be copyright protected.
Well, it's the burden that's imposed by the DMCA. In this case, Mr. Gunther is aware of what's going on, or should know what's going on, because he's gotten so many DMCA letters. But his attitude is that if it's free on the internet and it's from a privately protected website, he stops his investigation right there. He says that for the record. The facts of this case are very, very specific. This is not my
This is a question of law, really. I mean, the guy may be somebody with an attitude, you know, and obviously everybody seems to have thought so. But there are serious questions here about what is the burden to look into the level of copyright protection of everything that a search turns up.
But it becomes a question of facts when he's already admitted on the record that he won't investigate.
Well, tell us, what is the clearest example of infringement that MyVidster promotes?
Well, I believe we produced records of repeat infringers that had posted multiple copyrighted...
Give me a simple example.
A copyrighted video of Flava that was found on a third-party website that was reposted on MyVidster.
And so what exactly happens? Someone who subscribes to or goes to MyVidster, he sees a... He sees on MyVidster a way of getting access to a unauthorized to somebody's website which has an unauthorized copy of copyrighted work. Is that it?
And he does it multiple times, not just once. He does it multiple times. He does
so
it more
do
than
you
one
want,
time.
Who
do
is
you
the
want,
he doing yeah. multiple times?
The MyVidster user.
The user, why is multiple times important?
Because that makes him a repeat infringer. He's posting copyrighted videos, not just once,
Wait,
but
you're
multiple
speaking,
times.
You speak too softly and too rapidly. This person is, okay, he has used MyVidster to find a website that contains an unauthorized copy of a copyrighted work, and now he goes to that website using instructions provided by MyVidster, right?
Right.
He goes to it. Now, when he is looking at that unauthorized copy, he's not infringing, right? He's just looking at an unauthorized copy.
What he does is he posts it on MyVidster, and he does it more than once. He does it with
when
several copyrighted videos.
When you say he posts it,
what does
though,
that mean?
He creates an embedded link.
He puts a link on.
Puts a
that's
link on.
Right. So all that would be like my saying to somebody, you know, if you want to go watch The Iceman Cometh, go down the street to the Goodman Theater, and they might charge you some money to let you in, but that's where you need to go.
Well, this is different.
Or if I had a very long telescope and I could say, look through this telescope, you can watch the...
You're telling us, no, this is, the analogy breaks down because you're telling someone if you want to go watch a movie for free, you know, break in through the back door, and then they tell you that multiple times.
My Vidster doesn't know which ones are free and which ones aren't. There's a huge amount of content on the Internet, some of which is copyrighted and restricted, a great deal of which is not.
That's where the DMCAs come in. Flavorworks sent in multiple DMCAs that focused on repeat infringers.
Why don't you follow the links and send them to the website that's hosting the infringing content?
Because you would be chasing pirates all over the world in different foreign jurisdictions.
Life is hard. I mean, that's what...
I've lost the thread now. When someone has been directed by my Vidster to its unauthorized copy and looks at it, he's not infringing. Reading someone's illegal copy is not itself copying, right?
Well, we put my Vidster on notice when we send DMCA notices of the repeat infringers.
Well, that doesn't
answer. You're not
answering
my question. My question is, if I watch something that is an illegal copy, I'm not making a copy of it. So I'm not infringing copyright, am I?
No, it's when you post it on my Vidster for others.
Okay, so I'm this person and I'm watching Star Trek without paying anything. So I'm watching this. But does this get into the backup copies? If I make a copy of that for myself, then of course I am infringing. But suppose I just watch it. Or maybe I watch it over and over again. I'm not paying for it, but I'm not making a copy, right?
Right. It's not the watching.
So where's the copyright infringer? Certainly the person who copied onto his website this copyrighted work that he hadn't bought. So that's an infringer. So is the notion that my Vidster is promoting that kind of infringement or some other infringement?
It's the notion that my Vidster is allowing users to repost, to post these copyrighted videos on their site.
Wait a second. Let me get an answer. When you say rehost, is what you're worried about is that the person who has gotten access to this website via my Vidster is now copying it onto his website?
Copying it onto my Vidster's website by posting it, the links to it.
Copying onto my Vidster's website. I'm watching Star Trek without paying. So I'm just doing that. If I just do that, I've certainly gotten to the illegal copy via my Vidster. I've done that. But now, what is this business about posting on my Vidster?
Well, the copyrighted works has to have been originally...
I'm talking about the person who's watching this stuff, right? Illegal. I mean, he's watching the illegal copy, okay, of Star Trek. Now, what is this... He doesn't do anything afterwards. He doesn't copy it afterwards, does he?
I believe with the My Vidster technology, he could repost it again.
Yes, but that's the backup copy, right? I watched Star Trek. I've gotten through this website of someone who had the unauthorized Star Trek. I watched that. Now, I may want to have a copy of that on my own website. And if I did that and made a copy, I would be an infringer. Now, is that what you're worried about, that my Vidster is facilitating this copying by the people who get access to the illegal, to the unauthorized copy through my Vidster? Is that what you're worried about?
Yes, we're worried about my Vidster facilitating
backup copies. That is, these are the customers of my Vidster who are making copies and not just watching some unauthorized copy?
Yes, that's our concern, that they're allowing...
Well, I thought the backup copies that my Vidster is happy to have an injunction against assisting in enabling backup copies.
It doesn't stop.
Is your only concern the backup copies?
No, we're concerned with MyVidster allowing users to embed or post copyrighted videos onto the MyVidster site.
And that's
backup
what I want to get at. I thought he has a more
copies?
Expansive
aren't
notion.
No, no, you can embed. You can embed multiple copies of a video on MyVidster.
Right, so you're someone who's watched this. What does embedding mean?
I believe it creates some sort of link.
It's a link. It's a non-copying theory of contributory infringement. You think it violates the copyright laws to tell somebody where to find an infringing copy, is what I'm understanding you to say. So they don't have to copy it. They don't have to upload it. You think it actually violates the copyright laws to say, hey, if you want to find an infringing copy of Star Trek, go to this website.
No, I think there are infringing and non-infringing uses of technology. The statute just says
would
other
you,
devices.
So you don't think what I just said?
I think that technical argument just splits hairs. I think that's
so
obvious.
So in other words, you would agree it does not then violate the copyright laws to tell somebody where to find an infringing copy?
If you
yes,
know...
Yes or no? Does that violate the copyright
it
laws?
It does if you know that that's copyrighted material. Just like if you're telling someone where
that's
the most...
That was part of my point. So if I said to you, if you want to watch a free, you know, unauthorized copy of the latest Harry Potter movie, go to such and such a website, you think I have copied in some way that's an infringement of the copyright laws?
Yes, because there's no such thing as a free,
even
unauthorized copy.
Even though I haven't
copy.
Copied anything, I've just told you where somebody else has violated the law.
Because there's no such thing as a free, unauthorized copy. If something is unauthorized, that's copyright infringement.
So at what point in time, in a given... what point in time does MyVidster, in an individual instance, become a copywriter, violate the copyright law?
When it allows people to repost copyrighted videos on its websites to be distributed and shared to other people.
To post the links, though, not the videos.
Just the posting of the link?
But the statute talks about device or process. If you want to call it posting a link or embedding, there are...
But they're not posting the videos. They're posting a link, and then somebody has to go to the original server to actually watch the video.
But the copyright statute doesn't split hairs in terms of a technical argument. It talks about
it
other
does,
devices
actually.
Or processes. It's created so that it adjusts to changing technology.
You'd be making an argument that somehow MyVidster was promoting infringement by somehow creating a market for these infringers. But apparently that's not your argument. I mean, you could certainly it would be a violation if MyVidster was in cahoots somehow with the direct infringers.
It is creating a market because it's allowing repeat infringers to stay on its website.
Who are these direct infringers, these people who copy? They're just free riders. They're not in the business of, right? They're not selling their illegal copies.
Well, if these reprint infringers are members of a third-party website that gives them rewards, when people are redirected to those videos, they can earn rewards.
Who earns rewards?
If you create a membership in a third-party website and you post videos on MyVidster and you direct traffic to that third-party website, you can earn rewards based on the different
files sharing websites out there. No, I'm talking about the illegal copies. In the first instance, these people who are copying Star Trek, you know, and posting it on their website, and then people come via MyVidster and watch it, are they in business? Doesn't look like it because they're not selling these illegal copies.
And it seems to me the logic of your argument would mean that everyone who ever posts a link, you know, whether it's on your GChat status page or anything, is violating the copyright laws. People send links all the time, and it's a very expansive theory of liability you're suggesting.
People don't set up websites that host massive amount of copyrighted materials and index them and create plugins for Firefox
browsers. But they're not, well, I wish you would be more precise because I don't think they're hosting the materials themselves. They're hosting a roadmap about where to go find the materials.
The statute doesn't say roadmap. The statute says
I'm saying that the statute was written before links existed. And, yes, of course it doesn't say roadmap, but the statute doesn't say if you want to find a bootleg copy of Maya Angelou's latest poems, you know, here's a store in some sketchy neighborhood that you can go to. That's just not at that level of detail. It's not addressed in the statute.
I think that the statute talks about devices or process. I don't think that this is the perfect 10 case. It's not a neutral automated search engine. It's people engaging in volitional acts, trolling the web, looking for copyrighted works.
And I am unpersuaded by that only because it seems to me that you're just one step removed with the Google algorithms. It's a human who's indicating the search it wants Google to conduct for it, and so that strikes me as pretty volitional, too. I realize it's, you know, once you've hit search, you know, then the algorithm takes over, but so what?
I mean, if your view is correct, then you can just set up thousands of websites and post copyrighted videos from Norway or Scandinavia or some jurisdiction, and everything would be free. People don't have to pay for anything.
Well, the person whose copyright has been infringed has only to follow the link and send the notice and get the host of the infringing material to take it down.
You could fly to Russia or China and look for
a
lawyer.
That's a problem anyway.
Thousands.
Believe me, you don't want to get into the question of international intellectual property rights right now, since it's not.
Well, okay, thank you, Mr. Yuan. Mr. May, how much time does he have? No, 1 minute? Okay.
Your Honors, Section 106 of the Copyright Act speaks specifically to this issue. In order to be a direct infringer, one must transmit or otherwise communicate the underlying work. A link does not do that. The Ninth Circuit got that correct in Perfect 10. They looked at the same type of technology. They called it inline linking. That's the same as embed linking. And they determined that a link does not transmit or otherwise communicate the underlying work, and therefore the link creator cannot be a direct infringer.
Why isn't Mr. Huon correct that your service is promoting infringement? It's allowing someone to copy, you know, customer Flava can copy a film and then can go and say, oh, you know, come and get my film. don't bother with Flava, just come to me, and for some small fee you can watch all of Flava's works on my website.
First, the backup service has been suspended and we're willing to have an injunction to that effect. Second, my Vidster doesn't charge anybody to look at these videos.
I don't understand the backup. I don't understand that. I'm saying, suppose you have someone with a website. It has nothing to do with Flava. Not part of Flava. But he's a subscriber to Flava, and when he watches a movie from Flava, he posts it on his website. He downloads it to his website, and then he invites people to come to his website bypassing Flava, and he charges a modest fee. And suppose my Vidster acts as a kind of middleman, saying to people, look, here are all of these illegal copy sites, and you can go there and you can get these, and you can bypass Flava.
Your Honor,
wouldn't that make my visitor an accomplice in copyright infringement?
I guess I question the hypothetical, because if the host who got it from Flava is trying to make money by showing it to people, he can't make it publicly available. He has to protect it with a password or something in order to charge money. And if it's not publicly available, it can't be embedded on my Vidster.
Maybe he sells advertising. Then you don't have a paywall. Sells advertising, an Aimster, and then MyVidster, you know, is linked with him and sends people there, and people pay a subscription fee to MyVidster, and MyVidster directs them to all these illegal sites where they can watch stuff free, although they have to watch advertising with it. Wouldn't that be a violation?
I guess two responses. Then we would start getting into the question of substantial non-infringing uses, of which there are many on this site. And two, even under that scenario, even if a prima facie case could be made, my client would be entitled to DMCA safe harbor protection, because my client responds to DMCA takedown notices and takes down the material. And that is what he is obligated to do under the DMCA, because Congress, in passing it, put the burden of policing copyrights directly on the copyright holder.
Is that the only responsibility for the safe harbor, that you take down on complaint, take down infringing, or?
There are others. You need to have a repeat infringer policy. You need to accommodate standard technical measures of the copyright holder so that the copyright holder can police your website, which the copyright holder does. It's unlike Aimster, where everything was encrypted. The copyright holder can and does come onto our site, searches for keywords, and sends us DMCA notices. The copyright holder could automate that process. They could be searching our website every day and sending us DMCA notices every day using the very keywords that the trial court put in the preliminary injunction. My point is that obligation is on the copyright holder to police, not for my client to have to write some software to search its website to block videos that may make reference to a keyword. That's not what Congress intended, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both of you. We'll move on to our next